Welcome to Work It, How to Be a Grown-Ass Podcaster, featuring panels from WNYC's first ever podcasting festival designed for creative women working in audio and digital media. Over the course of 2 days in June of 2015, WNYC brought together women leading the way in creating today's most innovative and groundbreaking podcasts. In this episode, Pat Harrison, president and CEO of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, hilariously champions the role of women in public media. Plus, here our panelists consider the dreaded phenomenon of vocal fry and the way their voices are consistently scrutinized.
Good morning and happy Festivus. I'm really thrilled, to be with you today, and my colleagues are here from CPB, Erica Pulley-Hayes and Elise Garfinkel. But I have to be honest, any conference focused on growing my ass is a concern. Especially if twerking lessons are included. So when I got the invitation, I thought, I don't know. But I reread Laura Walker's very nice invite and realized that this is a gathering where women can learn how to become or how to get better at being podcasters. Work it, not twerk it. And of course, I am always so thrilled to get out of Washington, D.C. I'll say very little about that because this is being streamed But the real reason I want to be here is the opportunity to return to New York, my native land. And I know with this accent you thought I was from the South, right? Okay. All the speech lessons, they just didn't work. But anyway, and it's also an opportunity for me to thank Laura Walker for her leadership and the work of the great, great team at WNYC on behalf of women and media. Laura is such a true leader. A great person to work with. In fact, one of the first people I met when I came to CPB almost 10 years ago, and she came in, and I don't even remember what she said, something about building some sort of space. I said, it was right after 9/11. I mean, it was 2005, so not too far after 9/11. I said, whatever it takes, whatever it takes. You're from New York. That's all I need to know. And then since then, no one has let me out, you know, so. But the interesting thing is that women and podcasting were really made for each other. We are the original storytellers, sharing information openly and generously. I mean, really, how many times have we asked a friend, how do you open a Swiss bank account? Or do you know a good divorce attorney? Okay, maybe not those questions exactly. But you know what I mean. And the suggestions always come with a story. And the interesting thing to me is that for decades, public media, radio, and television has been telling America's story, and that story continues to change as America changes and becomes more diverse. And in so many ways, our stories are becoming much more interesting. But the fact is, as women, we have been interesting forever. Absolutely. Sometimes we just don't realize it, but just put that in your head. You're very interesting. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, where every single woman had an opinion and never, ever waited for you to ask, what was it? I thought that was normal. And I remember when I was in high school and I was going to Manhattan, and I was standing on the subway, on the platform, and I was next to this woman who was very well-dressed, calm, you know, not foaming at the mouth. That was the other woman on the other side. And she started talking to me, and she said, yeah, I told him. She said, you know, as if we had been having an in-depth conversation. Yeah, you know, I told him, you fool around and I'll kill you. So, he fooled around, and I killed him. At that moment, the train arrived, and I was really released from making a citizen's arrest. But I always wondered, did she really kill him? And that's what a good story really does. It keeps you coming back for more. So we are so fortunate that we live today. Well, we have no other choice, I mean. So we may as well look at it as a benefit. Because technology has made it possible for us to access the stories we want to hear and tell them on our timeline, not someone else's, to hear stories from strangers. And after they're over, they just impact your life because you think about them over and over again. I mean, really, who knew that the world was waiting for Bad Mother? That all those feel-good books about how we could be good mothers really wasn't doing anything for us. And podcasting opened up a whole new venue where women could really move beyond stereotypes and connect through the truth, truths that we really all recognize. Fugitive Waves with the wonderful Kitchen Sisters, stories from the flip side of history. I really am not so sure it is the flip side of history. More and more, I think it is the right and real side. And we need more right and real side stories. Now, I know all these initials are confusing, CPB, PBS, WNYC, NPR. The Corporation, though, for Public Broadcasting, CPB, we have a very specific and unique task that was given to us by Congress. We serve as the steward of the federal appropriation, and we have to ensure that the monies that we get through this appropriation truly are strengthening and advancing public media so it can be relevant in the lives of Americans the way they're living their lives now. So it means we have to be constantly investing in innovation in the present just to keep up with Americans who really have left the couch taking all their techno toys with them. And we want to be on that trip with them, delivering content that people want, when they want it, where they want it, how they want it. And podcasting delivers a customized opportunity for listening to stories that inspire, make you laugh or cry, or just feed your curiosity. My priorities for CPB, and they've been in place quite a long time, are shaped by what we call the 3Ds, digital, diversity, dialogue. But now, in terms of digital, I've substituted the word disruption. And disruption is wonderful. It is so great. Otherwise, we would be just embracing the status quo. And a good friend of mine, Howard Stringer, a former CEO of Sony, said, be careful that you don't hold onto the status quo long after the quo has lost its status. So disruption insists that we bring new thinking to replace old thinking, that we keep asking, why not? So the best stories are not cosmeticized. They connect us to our humanity as we try to deal with whatever life, I guarantee you, is going to throw at you. And I'm very curious, how many of you read Sheryl Sandberg's letter on Facebook? It was, to me, the most extraordinary thing. As she talked about her grief, her pain, her anger, her loss, and hope following the death of her husband. It's one of the most real things about death and separation and love and loss beyond cliches that you can read, and I recommend it. It was, for me, a story I won't forget. And that kind of connection is why we want to listen to the Kitchen Sisters, Anna Sale, Hillary Frank, Manoush. But the fact is, we really need more women in podcasting. And that's why CPB is so proud to support WNYC's commitment to grow this kind of storytelling. And I'm so glad I was able to come up here and listen a little while. Last night was hilarious, really, really good. I can see our grant has been put to good use, but I have to tell you, this is only the beginning of our commitment, and we want to do more. And I have a feeling we will. Laura's got the proposal right now. is what I love about it. This festival really gives us an opportunity to help all of you and many, many others take a look at what it takes to really be a great podcaster, and then help other women tell these stories, discover their voice. So I want to thank you all for being here and for what you do. I know I'm going to hear much more from you in the future. So stay happy, stay angry, and don't give up. Thank you.
Woman her own show is what I have to say. Like, so awesome. Thank you, Pat. So I want to get to our much anticipated panel conversation about women's voices. We talked about some of the challenges, some of the sort of hurdles there are to making sure that a woman-led podcast gets off the ground. And as we all know, one of the obstacles that seems to be getting some attention is our voices. So does this sound familiar?
And Thompson kept hearing that term, school to prison pipeline.
Okay, hear the way that her voice kind of creaks on the word pipeline? That's vocal fry.
Pipeline.
Mickey, by the way, sounds like this.
She'd never experienced anything outside the church. And she basically checked out on Will and the kids.
Quote, perhaps Elise could cover the vocal fry epidemic. It'd be really interesting to hear her take, as she is clearly a victim herself. For the record, here is Elise.
Because Roxanne was the only one supporting her young daughter, she had to be able to work.
When investigative reporter Susan Zalkind was on our show last year with the story of the FBI shooting a man connected to the Boston Marathon bombers, she sounded like this.
But Ibrahim also got arrested for beating a guy unconscious over a parking space at a mall in Florida.
A woman wrote in, quote, the growl in the woman's voice was so annoying that I turned it off.
Something called vocal fry that is creeping into the speech patterns of young women. NBC's chief medical editor, Dr. Nancy Snyderman, is here to explain away.
This story on the Today Show raises the possibility that talking this way harms young women's voices. Since then, many researchers have said this doesn't seem to be true. The Today Show story also says this only affects women.
But is there anything equivalent in men?
No, there isn't. And you know what's interesting?
There's now robust evidence that men do this too. And like a lot of the other coverage, the Today Show story pathologizes vocal fry. Says that it's some kind of problem instead of, you know, just the way that some people talk. And it teaches viewers to spot it. Today Show host Matt Lauer starts a segment saying that he's never heard of this and ends it saying he'd never noticed it before. And now he's going to be on the alert for it.
That's it.
Well, that's the first time I actually heard
it.
Yeah,
you have to really listen. And Kim Kardashian really sort of has it.
I will start
to listen.
You're
just not going
to
be hip enough to be there.
Okay, so thank you to the folks at This American Life for explaining vocal fry to the world so thoroughly. This sort of has ignited a discussion around women's voices in broadcasting. So this next panel discussion is called Vocal Fry, but, you know, in the spirit of working it, let's just call it, like, owning our voices. Thank you very much. Yeah. Right now, podcasts are getting more popular. We're hearing more women. And this is my theory. Like, the more women we hear, that's the reason why we're getting more feedback and advice. I'd like to give you my own personal example from a well-meaning listener named Matthew who emailed me. Manoush, I have some suggestions for your style. Look, I get it. You're supposed to be a young, hip show, but you come off sounding like a podcast from a teenager's bedroom. I would talk like an adult and stop trying to make it sound cool and lowbrow. It's not working, and I'm 26. I'll tell you what I wrote back to Matthew during the break. Okay, so one more example. I just want to play you a clip of me. This is me subbing for Brian Lehrer. I'm talking to WNYC transportation reporter Kate Hines, love her, about the MTA's new subway etiquette campaign, and in particular, their push to discourage men from manspreading on the subway. That's their term, not ours.
Manspreading.
The scourge of manspreading.
Yes.
Poles.
Pole spreading is like my personal bete noir. In a way, I find it more annoying than manspreading, because at least when you're the victim of manspreading, you have a seat. You know, what are you complaining about? You're sitting down. The pole leaners. Like, that just drives me crazy.
This one person was so angry with me. What do we do about that? That personal moment where somebody sort of wants to pick a fight and you're standing right next to each other.
You be your higher self.
Okay.
I mean, you just get in touch with your higher self and smile and say, I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay. All right. That's good. Okay. So let's...
That was one of my favorite segments I've ever done, and I have never gotten so much reaction, love, end hate to one segment. Everyone had an opinion. And I think it stood out because it sounded like two women just having a conversation and actually enjoying themselves, too, and having opinions. So that it did surprise me, though. I did not think that I kind of finished. It was like, Kate, that was cool. See you later. And then, whoa, so much reaction. So that's just my experience. And I suspect many of you have had your own experience with a female or a male colleague or a boss, or maybe someone has told you you don't have the voice or you don't sound quite right. Or I have been told that I enunciate too much. So everybody has a thought, right? That's what the next panelists are going to discuss, how gender factors into what we do behind the microphone, what authoritative really means. Hopefully they won't use as many air quotes as I have during their discussion, whether it's a podcast or it's on air. And I want to welcome back Molly Webster of Radiolab, who's also the voice of Freakonomics. Maybe you didn't know that. She's going to be the moderator for this panel.
Hello. I'm so excited to be doing this. I've had to think about this a lot. So when I was thinking about this panel and what to say, the only thing I could think of was, I thought of a lot, to be honest. But the thing that I'm going to start with is that a couple of months ago, Radiolab did this thing. It was like a spoof on, you know, Jimmy Kimmel does that thing where you read the celebrities mean tweets about themselves. And so Radiolab was like, did something called like Haters Gonna Hate, which was just like reading mean tweets like we had gotten. And so we were charged basically with going and looking at comments to see like what people had said about the show or something. And it was a sad day at Radiolab. But I will tell you, and I sort of never, I try to avoid comments, and we can talk about that here because there's just it can be pretty negative. But I fell into this world where I realized that people have an issue with the way I talk, which is, and so I'll read you my two favorites, and then we'll go. One is, I did this story about this guy named Craig. So it said, my only complaint is that Craig should have narrated the entire thing because Molly sounds like a not-so-well-read teenager. That was one. And then the next one, if I can do the voice, I will. Like, for instance, when producer Molly Webster started to talk, I keep thinking, like, I'm not in the Red Rock of Utah. I'm in, like, a Starbucks where, like, some high school sophomore sucking on her iced aspartame lace quadruple latte starts telling me about the time she and some of her friends did something, like, really cool. And so I was like, wow, okay. Well, I hope they like the story. And so it's funny because at some level, I get together with my girlfriends, with my colleagues, and we laugh about these things. But at another level, we all know this, it's a really serious conversation. Why do people care so much? Should we care that they care? You know, as this medium is changing and there's more opportunities for women's voices and we're, pushing ourselves to the forefront, you know, there's just, it's a big conversation to be had. And so I'm very excited. I'm going to invite the panelists up. And then I'll break down how we're gonna kind of do this. Yay! All right. I apologize to you guys. You just get like an elbow. That's all you get. Okay, so my amazing panelists are Mary Harris, who is gonna be the host of WNYC's new and not yet named podcast, but it's gonna be amazing. Then we have Lulu Miller, who is the co-host of NPR's breakout hit Invisibilia with Elise Spiegel. And then we have Heaven Nagatu, I'm so excited about this, from BuzzFeed's Another Round, which will be great, co-host. And then Brooke Gladstone, who's gonna just awe us with her wisdom, host of On the Media. And if we're lucky, she'll like pull out her electronic cigarette in the middle and throw a little sass our way. So in a real quick second, we're going to hear a sound of all these women's voices. But I just, now that I have their full attention, I want to say, so what I was thinking with this panel is I want to talk a little bit in the beginning just about, we have like an hour before we're going to open it up to Q&As. Not really, but no one will kick me off the stage. So I want to spend some time talking about just kind of vocal tics, basically, that people keep talking about, the elephant in the room, vocal fry. Brooke and I were talking about upspeak and likes and these types of things. And then I want to get into a bigger conversation about just sort of the profession as it changes and women as authoritative voices and that type of thing. And then talk at the end about finding your own voice as a female host or as a female producer who's creating content. And then that'll open it up into a Q&A with you guys. So I want to start by hearing the clip of all these ladies' voices.
The snakes had this special kind of friction, what's called anisotropic friction, where the friction works more intensely in one direction. Mm-hmm. And so to see how much of a role this plays in their speed, all he would have to do is see how the snake moves without scales.
So the best thing we could do was put a snake into a sock.
It's a snake in a sock!
For years, my husband Mark and I had been wrestling with the idea of having a second kid, a sibling for our son, Leo.
I always love you, but I'm enjoying a comic book right now.
2 weeks after we decided to try, we found a lump.
I was so pissed. I was like, this can't be happening. Like, we've just finally made this decision after, like, years of debate.
I rubbed it and a genie came out and gave me 3 wishes. And so I wish for a gorgeous house. And you see behind me this huge mansion? Yeah, it's really nice. That's the house. And then I wished for a beautiful wife. And you see that really lovely blonde coming down the street? That's my wife. And then here's where I think I went wrong. I wished for a big orange head.
We are so very excited for our next guest.
Thrilled.
We have the First Lady of New York City, y'all, Miss Shirlane McCray.
Yay.
Here. She's the chair of the Mayor's Fund to Advance New York City, a nonprofit organization that focuses on supporting public programs in areas including mental health and support for young men and women of color.
Ooh. So excited to be here.
Oh, my God.
Excellent, lady. And I just want to take a quick poll of the room, a hand raise. If you like myself or Manoush or any of these women on the panel, have had a comment about your voice, your style of speak, vocal fry, likes, any of those things, just to get a sense. Okay, so that's almost everyone. All right. It's good to know. So, Lulu, I want to start with you. We are of the generation of vocal fry. So I want to know, do you think about it? Have you ever been accused of it? Do you care?
Well, no, actually, so, okay, disclaimer, you know Magic Eye?
No.
Those books from the 90s where you could, like, see a sailboat if you blurred.
Is it like 3Ds, like an illusion?
Yes.
Okay, illusions.
I've never been able to see a magic eye. Okay. And I can't hear vocal fry. So, like, even...
Oh,
it's like magic eye? So maybe, okay. So maybe I don't hear it because I have a similar disability with stereotropic vision and hearing. Maybe
Lulu
there's some sort of willful...
Podcast.
Will, yeah, that was stereotropic, was definitely the right word. Maybe there's some sort of willful... Maybe something else is going on and there's, like, a willful refusal to hear it. And I heard that This American Life segment and I loved it. And the whole time I was, like, so... What is it? Like, I can't... I mean, I know what Demi Moore sounds like, and that, to me, sounds like a husky voice. I think I can hear a husky voice, but I don't think vocal fry is a husky voice, right? Isn't it something else? So I can't hear it, and there is some basic part of me that feels like this whole conversation in some ways is, like, discussing the thread count on the Emperor's New Clothes. Like, I'm like, okay... Let's examine it. But then I'm like, okay, maybe it's real. So I wanna acknowledge that maybe it is a thing, and it must be if some people are so, because some of the comments are so furious, it's turning off the dial furious. So maybe it is a real thing. I'm dubious. I am dubious that it exists, but I think it's interesting to talk about what it might be. Have I ever received? I didn't until I started working on Invisibilia. And now, and then there's this thing that Elise and I have similar voices and people can't tell us apart, which I thought was ridiculous until my dad was like, that was a great story that you did for 22 minutes. That wasn't me, Dad. The one about the lovely, like,
that is
transgender.
Funny, because, like, the Freakonomics announcing, I'll have people be like, you read that ad, like, so well. And I was like, Mom, that wasn't me.
Yeah.
That was some, like, other lady. I don't know.
Yeah, Dad, that was not your daughter for 22 minutes, but I love you. More, we've gotten a few things about vocal fry and it being horrible, and we would listen to the show if only you didn't have fry. But more, I've gotten, like, that we sound like we're going shopping, which I guess is a different issue than not this.
Well, so Heaven, you have just burst into the podcasting audio world. Do you think about your voice and how it sounds?
I'm also of the opinion that vocal fry doesn't exist, or I just can't hear it. But the kinds of comments we get are more like, I'm a very active listener, so I say yes all the time, which some people are like, it's like disruptive, but like mostly people are like, oh, this is so fun. Mm-hmm. So most of the time I just don't hear or care for the comments about voices. Like, what am I supposed to do? Change my voice? Like, I cannot do that. I'm not allowed to do impressions in the studio. So there's no way I can change my voice because I'm so bad at it. Vocal fry I still don't think is real. Like, it's like the way, nobody's like pathologizing Ira Glass's voice. He has his own tics and
his
own.
They did when he started.
I was like, I think there is some Ira Glass tic happening. But now I almost feel like it's the thing people aim for in a weird way.
Right. Well, maybe in like 20 years, vocal fry is what we'll all aim for. I don't know.
Brooke, I think you have some vocal fry feelings.
Well, Ira said that he thought it was generational. I guess I'm of the general feeling that everything you do and every way you use your voice has content. It gives content. So then, and I do hear vocal fry sometimes, so the question is, what's the content being conveyed? I mean, when you hear Ira do it, there was that great moment on Colbert, you might remember, where Colbert says, I love the way you suck the life out of everything. Ira goes, what do you mean? And he goes, well, you know, I'm Ira Glass, this is This American Life, today's subject, dogs. You know, that kind of thing. Okay, so what is Ira saying there? Ira is saying, this is boilerplate. I don't really believe what I'm saying. That's a fried delivery. Whenever definition of vocal fry, it's a flattening out. It's a fried delivery. It says, I don't really care about this. And he says that vocal fry is generational, and maybe, I'm not of this generation, so I can only speculate, there was a certain disdain for passion and commitment. It was better if everything was kind of conditional. I think that women have a tendency to maybe do it more because women are still working on basically owning what it is they say, and to flatten it out or to upspeak it is to make it more conditional, and therefore I'm not in your face, I'm not that kind of girl, you know, that kind of thing. And so it's, I mean, I may be overthinking the thing, but I think we've had tons of kids, boys, interns on the show with lots of vocal fry. We've also had interviewees of both sexes, maybe of all three, with or four or five, with vocal fry. And, you know, I think it's, part of it is just, I've been through it all before. Part of it is, I mean, if you hear Ira, who really does do a version of it a lot, that doesn't stop him from getting all passionate and spewing saliva when he gets really excited. And that's the thing, is that that flattening is something. And then the passion is something else. One other thing I might say about vocal fry is simply, if they aren't complaining about vocal fry, these vocal fry freaks, and I've never gotten that, and my voice will crack on the bottom all the time, if they aren't complaining about that, then they're complaining about pitch. You know, when we got our new host, TLDR, at TLDR, we had some people tweeting, I just can't stand the sound of her voice. It was a high-pitched voice. So you've got this perfect zone that the mostly guys out there are, you know, who are prone to complain won't like. It's, you know, anything that's high is like painful, which is what they said about the TLDR host. Mm-hmm. She did not have a shrieky, painful voice. And or else you've got your fry, because women are dropping their pitch. And I think they are doing it either consciously or unconsciously, and they just can't get enough air down there. Well, so you're going to have fry.
Yeah, well, I do. Yeah. Well, I was actually thinking about this morning when I was listening to some podcast where I was thinking, is it that traditionally sort of like this, you know, I'm at the nightly news desk, and I am sort of have this like serious, deeper male baritone, and I'm delivering the news that in some, and even if you hear like NPR newscasters, you know, it's like a very mellow kind of even, and I wonder if at some level people are trying to match that, and in matching it, it's, go ahead, Mary.
Well, I guess I'd just say, I feel like I've watched this transition happen. Mm-hmm. So before I came into radio, I spent about a decade at ABC right. News. I was working at World News Tonight and Good Morning America. And that's a place where your own voice doesn't really exist. You're a newscaster. You are conveying the news. It is all about not you, but the story. And I remember the first time I worked with a correspondent who was really trying to put his own voice into the story. And I stood back like, do you really want to do that? And he's like, yes, that's my voice. And his name is Bill Weir. He's on CNN now.
Yeah, yeah, he's great.
And he really got that we're at this moment of transition where being a part of your story is important. And mm-hmm. I think that's really what this is about.
Yeah.
And if you want to hear vocal fry, and if you want to hear your tics, do a radio diary. That's what I did. Yeah. And you listen to yourself like, ugh. You know, my dad sent me a note being like, you know, I hear all these ladies on NPR and they sound like Valley Girls who need attention. That's not you, honey. And I was like, well, you don't know how many likes were edited out of my radio diary, yeah. Dad.
Whereas like on Radiolab, they just boldly are like, we're keeping them all in. And I'm like, do you really want to do that? Like, maybe we could take out like the 18th like. Because I said a lot in that sentence. Do you guys ever have trouble listening to your own voices? Like, just I have so much guilt and shame. Like, I'll think, like, it's like the cultural prejudices come raining down when I'm listening back to my tape, where I'm like, oh, I sounded too flirty. Why did I laugh so much? Brooke is nodding. Everyone's nodding. Mm-hmm. And you had a lot of bourbon, so maybe after that you're like, Jesus, I shouldn't have had that fourth shot. I did threaten to bring out shots, but I decided not to. Anyone want to jump in? Lulu?
Oh, heck yeah. I mean, like you were saying, you say yes too much, and I started to realize, oh, I am so affirmative. You know, and I was once an unnamed producer at Radiolab, put together a lovely little daisy chains of my, like, into, like, because I say them so much. Like, you know, and so I actually have tried to peel myself back a little bit to say them less, and I notice it more, but of course, all the time. But I will say, and I'm thinking about the distance thing that maybe Fry is, or one of the things people are reacting to is this emotional distancing, and that is hard to hear in any form, just as it's hard to hear in an overly thick report. Like, it's sad to hear a human not being a human.
But it is to your point. I mean, it is hard for women in the sense of you either have too many opinions or you don't have enough. You're either too angry or you're really boring. Your voice is too high or it's too low. And it's this question of, I don't know, like, I guess what I was thinking about with listening to the tape is some sort of personal acceptance of this is how you sound.
Right.
Get over it. And try and shut out like all the things that culture and gender has pushed on you. But then also as a profession, you know, trying to figure out, do these things matter? Heaven, you were nodding.
Yeah. I think by like episode 2, I just got over the sound of my own voice. I was like, I cannot keep doing this. Yeah. You can't keep going if you every time you hear your voice and like reviewing the episode, you're like uncomfortable. Yeah. That won't work. Yeah. This isn't the job for you. But there's still
Radiolab,
obviously...
We just yell at ourselves. We'll just be like, oh, like Jad will be like, shut up, Jad. And then I'll be like, oh, it's whiny Molly again. That's how we deal with it.
There's still an element of, like, you want to get better, so you're like, oh, I'm generous with my laughter, but maybe I can pull back a little when I'm interviewing this kind of person. Or, you know, you, like, learn and you get better as, like, an interviewer, but you just got to get over yourself. Like, what are you going to do? You can't change how people feel about your voice. They got to do better and they got to get their lives together. There's nothing I can do about it. There's nothing I can do.
Yeah. Brooke, has your voice or your style of speaking changed over time?
Yeah, I completely endorse Heaven, you know, get over yourself in both areas, both in being self-conscious about your voice and also, I would say, in sealing it in stone, like, this is how I sound and therefore I will never change because that would be compromise, because I don't think that's a good idea either. I used to complain about this, hearing the sound of my voice, and it was a sincere complaint. I remember very early on when I was going on the air, really after being a reporter, which I wasn't around to hear it so much sometimes, but when I was filling in for Scott Simon, I was in NPR a lot, and I just said, I can't stand the sound of my voice. And then one day I was walking by, a bunch of engineers were working on some reels, and one of them said to the other, you know what I hate? I fucking hate when hosts say they can't stand the sound of their voice. Then shut the fuck up. And, you know, from that moment I said, yeah, shut the fuck up.
So that's your take-home message, everyone. That's all you need to know.
In terms of finding my voice, when I started, I was at NPR, and there was a very standard kind of NPR cadence, and I used to do it simply by lifting the soft palate. Everyone knows what that is, right? It's the sort of part at the back of your tongue, which if you're from New York, rests on the back of your tongue, and if you're from anywhere else, generally it's lifted. So I would say, from National Public Radio in Washington, D.C., this is Weekend Edition. Scott Simon is out this week. I'm Brooke Gladstone. And I would also do all my stories this way. The air would go over the back of the tongue. My voice sounded nicer. It really sounded nicer. Mm-hmm. And then one day I was home, and my kids were upstairs, and I was really annoyed at them. And I said, Sophie, Maxine, come downstairs. And they said, not if you have your radio voice. We're not coming down if you have your radio voice. At which point, slowly over time, and when I got my own chair, the soft palate got lower and lower and lazier and lazier, and you heard that piece of tape. There's this story about this guy with a big orange head. And, I'm okay with that. I'm totally fine with it. Sometimes I'm very puzzled by the reaction to my voice, as it's quite well known in the building. I would say half the listeners in my anecdotal experience, judging from the tweets, judging from people going to parties and saying that they work at WNYC, is at least half of my listeners think I am black and a quarter think I'm a lesbian. So when I meet them and I know it, I can see the disappointment creep across their face. And I say, I made some bad mistakes when I was young. It's too late. I can't do anything more. But, it would have been a lot cooler. But so that's another thing that you just accept. One thing, I think the most important thing I can share, and I can shut up for the rest of it, is
best... Own your voice, Brooke.
The one thing that I have that virtually none of you guys have... with the exception of maybe you two over there or some of those, is that I am 60. And I can't tell you, no. Oh, please, give me a break. Shut the fuck up. No. What I wanted to say is that you really stop giving a shit about so much. So much of my life has been driven by fear. So many of the vocal tics that we're talking about, these issues are all propelled by fear. And the wonderful, magnificent thing is that the older you get, it stops being a sort of a professional climb and it starts being, am I enjoying this ride at all? And then you stop caring. And if I could bequeath something to everyone here is if you could just feel like you were 60 professionally, so many of these problems would go away. The breaks, did you squeak too much? Did you sound like a girl? Did you hurt somebody's ears? Are you frying? Or any of that stuff. You just wouldn't care. So I wish you could have that. But you can't. You'll have to make do with youth.
I feel like that's your mic drop. You can just, boom, walk off the stage.
She don't care about this panel.
I don't care. Yeah. Let's rein it in, bro. Let's rein it in. Mary, just to go off of that, you're stepping from a producer role into being a host. Are you in any way thinking to yourself, like, what is my voice? Or I also think you're starting a health podcast, like in the sense of talk about managing being authoritative. I think a lot of times women-led health podcasts, and Manoush was saying this, or Hillary was saying this yesterday, was a lot of people think she's just like a mommy podcast. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes women at the head of like a health podcast or something could be quickly labeled as like, oh, this is going to be like, you know, how to eat better in the morning to like get through your day with your kids. Are you thinking about any of these things?
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't think it's going to be that because I love storytelling.
Oh, exactly.
That's what I want it to be. But I think that the thing about podcasts is that when you listen to a podcast, it completely relies on how much you trust that person. Mm-hmm. And it's a different relationship than you have with your radio. Or with your television or with any other kind of media in your life. It's plugged into your ears. You're listening to the podcast during an intimate moment. You're in the car. You're washing dishes. You're letting the podcast into your life in this very special way. And so I feel like that's really freeing. You can really be yourself. And yeah, I've done health reporting for a long time and producing, but I also have personal experience with health mm-hmm. issues. And I feel like that will help because it's about more than just conveying the news. It's not really about the news at all. It's about the fact that our lives, health is a huge part of our lives. Mm-hmm. It's just a part of how we live our lives. And you may not realize it until you reach a certain point, a certain age. And so that's what I want to convey.
Right. And Heaven, just to go off of this, she's talking about how do you achieve an intimate, like, conversational feel in a podcast and get people to trust you. Everyone's been talking about the Shalane McRae interview that you guys did. You guys are such a conversational show. How did you, and Tracy mentioned this a little yesterday, sort of finding the authoritative and what it meant to do that type of interview with the tone and style and sound of the show that you've set up. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, I mean, I think at BuzzFeed in general, our tone, as you know, probably is like super highbrow, lowbrow. We accept that humans like cats and philosophy and news and, you know,
all
like,
at the same time.
All at the same time, we're capable of multitudes. So that's kind of the vibe we want on the show, which is like we drink, we have fun, we talk about petty stories about breakups, but we also are like thinking about mental health and what money the city's putting into the infrastructure of that. Like, you know, these are all things one human can care about. Yeah. So we try to like incorporate that into our show. And the Shalane McRae episode was huge for us, but we tried to approach it just like any other normal show. It's like, oh, we're going to have our silly Jason Bateman quiz at the beginning. I hope she doesn't mind. And then get into like, we prepared some serious questions, but also like, she's also a normal human. So she's going to have like silly things to talk about, like The Good Wife or whatever. So that's just like our general vibe and our general approach to everything we do is like really get like the human side of this, which is like there's a lot of issues you got to discuss, but also you want to laugh and make jokes. Mm-hmm.
So besides, you dialed back on the drinking, but
you
other
did
than
dial
that,
back on the drinking.
But other than that, you sort of stayed true to the...
Yeah, we plan every show with sort of like... I plan every show in my head like John Oliver's... HBO show right now where it's like he goes long on one topic, but like the beginning is like short thing that's like kind of fun, and then at the end he might have some crazy silly like mascot on the stage or something. Like that's the kind of thinking I come into with like planning a show. It's like, oh, we need something super silly, break up the tone. Oh, we got to make sure we ask her about all these questions at the very beginning. We got to make sure she brings up her daughter before we do so that she feels comfortable sharing these kind of intimate things, but also feels comfortable enough to like share stories about what it's like being first lady. Do people touch your hair?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All those sorts of things.
Yeah. And Lulu, you were talking earlier about how now as the host of a show and a co-host with another female, that you notice comments about your sound more so than when you were a reporter at Radiolab, which was under two male hosts. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, one thing that's qualitatively different is that we're writing more, we're doing more scripting. We have longer blocks of copy. The Radiolab sound is harnessing so much authentic speech. So I think I was trained to think less about my voice because it just was, there was no moment alone in the studio like, who am I and how do I read these words right now? I'm going to think about my mom. There was less of that existential who the fuck am I sort of. There was just, you were being recorded as you talked. And then later you would write one sentence to bridge, as you know, like to bridge these things that had just fallen out of your mouth with no thinking about it. And so now a lot, I feel like I'm personally thinking about this question of how does my voice sound, because I have to read copy, which is newer to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I personally have like found my sweet spot. Maybe bourbon would help.
Yes.
I don't know. Like I haven't, I don't.
Or your 60-year-old self.
Or my 60-year-old.
I think bringing those together.
I'm going to be like, okay. And instead of plucking my gray hairs, I'm going to let them grow in, bring in a mirror, a bottle of bourbon, season two, Invisibilia, I got it down. Maybe there's more discomfort for some. Because we're hosts, there's more sort of, why are you woman-splaining at me? And it's more red. And I do hear whole blocks of copy where I don't like my read because I don't quite know how to do that yet. But then we do sometimes get comments often from young women who are like, I turned on the radio and I heard my voice for the first time. And they're not a lot of them, but there have been a few comments that we've gotten that are like, okay, just for as many people hate it, there are the people who are like, hallelujah, for the first time I'm hearing myself reflected.
Yeah.
And so I think, I don't know that the difference is that I'm hosting. I think for me, the comments have changed because I'm playing around with what I'm doing and I'm reading more, and maybe that sounds faker or stiffer. So I sort of have a theory that that's why the comments are more right now.
But I like that because it's like, as Brooke was talking about, your voice is going to continue to change and develop, and it's not like we're like locked in to one idea of who we are, what we are, and it could change between podcasts and what's on radio, or it could change between hosting and producing. And I will say that one of the things I always notice with Radiolab is, and I want to talk about sort of situations where you feel like, oh, that's me. Like I felt more authentic to myself there. And so I realize when I'm at Radiolab, it's the moments when Jad will make us go like put down the script. And you're like, why would I put down the script? And he's like, you know this part, just tell me the history. And I'm like, like from 1942 to like 1999 or like how much? And he's very, very patient. And so you just, and in those moments when you're just talking, when you just talk, then all of a sudden you go, oh, that's what I sound like. That's what. The other time is when I'm really angry. Like, or if I'm like field reporting and you're just, you know, 6 hours in, you just have no idea. I mean, at that point, I'm just talking to the mic like it's a therapy session. And then you listen back to that, and you're like, oh, I guess I do say like a lot. But Brooke, did you have had moments, you were kind of talking about situational moments where you just, maybe when your kids shouted at you, that's your radio voice?
Defining moment. Obviously, On the Media is a really different show. It's not... Yeah. Your show is just as difficult. I meant to say different because it is very scripted, and that's because we are a broadcast program principally, and we try and cram a lot of stuff into the hour, and so the most efficient way to do that is to write scripts, and you have to write very carefully, you have to write very tightly, you choose the exact right word. I enjoy that part. I really do. I really like that part. And then there are tricky things about writing scripts that you can read. And you know, there's, for instance, dependent clauses. You know, somebody who will talk about, I'm going to, you know, a lot of little phrases back to back that define the phrase that preceded it. And I found that I make those sentences very long sometimes, and it's because I have a pretty good vocal range, and if you drop a note for every dependent clause, you can set it aside. I was going to the store, but then I met a mailman. The mailman was carrying a bag. In the bag was actually a package for me. And so I went to get it. And then I went to get breakfast. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. So doom, 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 doom.
So you think a lot about, like, grammar. You think about how
you... I trained... That's putting it a little grandly. But my degree is in theater. I'll put it that way. I studied a little in London, did a little summer stock. Anyway, I cared about presentation. You know, in fact, the culture at NPR when I got there was, we were about the news. Let's be the New York Times of the air. They were just past their sort of freaky, you know, hippy-dippy phase and heading into their, we are mainstream. And, you know, it's great. You see the circle going around again, not to hippy-dippy, but to something distinct, individual, and alternative. NPR was striving for a mainstreamdom back then. I remember getting a note from Ellen Weiss once who said, it's really amazing how they let you talk like that. And I thought I was, you know, in the zone, but, mm-hmm. you know, you sound like, you know, Julie Kavner, then you sound like yeah. Julie Kavner.
Mary, what about you? Because I was listening to that, I re-listened to that, to your story mm-hmm. That we heard the clip of, and it was so, I just thought it was so beautiful, and you really did something where you were talking, you were at your house talking, I don't even understand how you recorded that much stuff, even maybe pre-knowing you were going to do a radio series about it. Were there any moments in there where you felt like you... like found sync with yourself somehow?
I was really happy when I got the word pissed on All Things Considered. Yes. I felt like it was a very authentic moment. And it was funny, I got a letter, like an email from the editor like the day before saying, oh, the lawyers or whoever has just approved this. And I was like, oh, really? We got to get that approved? Yeah. But I think the fact that I was talking through things contemporaneously with uh-huh. someone, what it was is I would go into a studio with the producer, Amanda Aronchik. She would talk to me or me and my husband, and we would just talk about what's happening. And to be able to listen to that was really wonderful in terms of just developing who am I, what is my voice, mm-hmm. Because I was just talking through something, kind of the way Radiolab does mm-hmm. it, because she'd been at Radiolab before, and so she just got me through it. And moving forward, it's a wonderful way to kind of know who you are. And who I am is kind of funny and kind of a little bit blue sometimes. And to be okay with that and then to be able to present that on air, I think that's why it resonated with people, mm-hmm. because it wasn't scripted in a really traditional way.
Right. And Heaven, you are in a very conversational show. And you went from print to audio. So did you have a moment where you felt like, oh, this is either the sound of who I am on air, or like a learning moment maybe as we think about how to develop your own voice?
I don't know if there's a moment, but it's interesting, like, seeing how the kinds of things I'd write on BuzzFeed versus the kinds of things we say on the show get received. And I think it's because of, like, the intimacy of the show and, like, our ability to, like, hone in on our own voices that you can have, like, these, like, small moments while you're listening to your show. You'd be like, oh, like, if I had just written this on the website, I just don't think it'd be received as well. It just falls flat. But when it's, like, me and Tracy laughing, exchanging, mm-hmm. it feels like people understand what we're trying to say better. Even if it was, like, a transcript of what our conversation was on the site, it just wouldn't convey the same message. There's so much in human communication that's just how you talk and how you laugh and, like, how you go about talking about certain subjects. So I think the moments for me have been just like hearing, oh, we perfectly captured that conversation, even if it was so impromptu, mm-hmm. so that people will be like, oh my God, you talked about spoken word. I hate spoken word too. Instead of like me trying to write out like a BuzzFeed post about spoken yeah. word, you know, like it's yeah. just different. So I really appreciate like the kinds of conversations we can have.
Yeah, and we want to go to the Q&A, but I do want to have a question about getting different types of voices into podcasting. I feel like correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like podcasting has broken us open to be able to have more of a different type of voice. That could be race, it could be gender, it could be conversation. And I don't know, Heaven, Tracy talked about this a lot yesterday about, being a Black voice in a primarily white community. And I would also even think about with these sort of the podcasting world now, it's like everyone's veering away from sort of the NPR stayed something, something, but then it's also maybe veering towards like a very similar sounding, like intimate storytelling where I'm going to tell you a story now and maybe I'm going to use vocal fry while I do it. And so I just wonder about ways of injecting to break the medium open, like even more, like what would you like to hear from new people coming up or new podcasts coming out, like different types of voices? Lulu?
Well, I've started thinking about right after Radiolab when a lot of things were sort of sounding like it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is the best thing ever for podcasting because people are going to get so sick of it that there'll be some new, like it's just going to create a tiring feeling in the listening that it's going to pave the way. Its own popularity is going to pave the way for something we can't even think of. And so I do think as things start to shift in one way, it makes a craving for something mind-blowingly different that more intense. And it makes the someone sitting around hearing the same old trick just be like, I'm sick of this. I need to invent something else. So I think it's a good, I think that we are seeing this beginning of an explosion of different ways of doing things, whether it's like, bringing in fiction, whatever it may be. I think we're in a moment where we're exploring, and some brand new idea that maybe none of us can even think of is being incubated.
Heaven?
Yeah, the absolutely 1,000% my favorite feedback we get is people emailing us being like, I've never heard brown girls like me, on podcasts, on radio, in media. And also people who are like, I've never listened to podcasts before, but you guys sound just like my friends. I want to tune in every week.
Yeah.
I have no doubt that people who love podcasts will find our podcast because our podcast is dope.
But the people
I really want to reach are the people who don't even know what podcasts are or who just don't think think it's just some white dudes farting in a mic. I don't know. So which is a lot of podcasts.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited for those kinds of emails, and I just can't, I'm excited for, to grow our audience and to, let people know, we're doing stuff like this, and you can be smart and funny and chill and drink bourbon all in one show.
It's funny, one of the things I've been thinking about since yesterday when we had these, small breakout groups in the afternoon, a woman in my group said a lot of times we're all talking about diversity, 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 I want diversity, and we invite diversity into the room, and then no one listens to it. Is that... And I just thought, wow, that really, I haven't stopped thinking about it. And I'm really curious what you think about that.
Yeah, it's not in my nature to be hopeful.
Okay. That's just a baseline.
It's just the baseline. I am excited by the kind of changing wave of podcasts, but I feel that. I feel like there are dope voices, but sometimes you have to be the one person who's invited on a panel to be the brown person, which is different.
That would never happen here.
Yeah.
That's not happening here. I'm headlining this conference.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That's not happening here. But I'm saying that definitely happens where they're let's get a freelancer brown person in. They'll do the brown beat. And then, that's their version of diversity versus no, we're part of the programming here. We decide what stories happen. So I guess I'm cautiously optimistic. Even that's generous.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of work to do.
And Brooke, one of the things that came up in the I Am Lakshmi Singh conversation, which is, I don't know if you guys know about this, but she wore the motherfucking hat. That's all you need to know. is diversity not just thinking about gender and race, but also age? It was also. I mean, you did say you were 60, so I feel like the floor is open. Don't look so surprised. Is all.
Well,
I'm
you
saying.
Know, it's time for the baby boom to take its big heavy foot off the manhole of culture anyway and shuffle off. So I'm not that worried about that. I would say that, you know, to echo what Lulu said, I would love to have some podcast experiences that aren't simply echoes of my own experience or of people 15 or 20 or 25 years younger who are white and all went to liberal colleges that had the $4 signs next to their names or something. Look, you know, that's how I raised my kids. It's great. But the thing is that you can get so precious to a point where, you know, it's, that your T-shirt shrunk, you know. Can we have something with some stakes? Or at least give me an experience that I haven't had before. And so what I'm really interested in is economic diversity. I want to hear stories from poor people. I mean, I don't know what those poors are thinking out there, I would really like to know what that's like.
I guess that's what I was meaning in the sense of I feel like we've gone from sort of the NPR broadcaster thing to like we're all going to sound like the certain way of podcasting thing, and it's sort of this, you know, young. No offense to the young people. It has a certain sound to it. And I do think Lulu's right that eventually we're going to be like, oh, I'm so sick of that sound. And then it's going to break open into something else.
But we love looking in the mirror. That's going to be the countervailing influence.
But I guess what I'm saying is I think that age is then a really important part of that. I don't want to shuck out all of the baby boomers for all the young, you know, young white kids. You know,
We've got a lot of Beatles retrospectives coming up.
I'm looking forward to them. Okay, so we want to open it up to the floor. Do we have any questions for our awesome panelists? Someone just wave a mic at me. We've got one back here. Oh wait, we'll go over to you over there. Okay, but you first,
okay,
back here.
Thanks. So I'm wondering, talking about like owning your voice, finding your voice. If any of you coach reads, how you do that, and also about encouraging people to write for their own voice, because I think that's a big part of it, and especially Brooke, writing for your voice. That means everybody's script. You can't have uniform scripts or even uniform ways of writing scripts.
And Mary, you think about this too, because you're more editing. Scripted, right,
yeah,
than these two in the middle with their conversations. So who wants to take that first? Brooke, maybe?
Well,
and then
I think in terms of coaching, I will encourage people to drink. I will encourage them sometimes to stand, although I don't. And I always encourage them to use their hands. Using their hands is huge. It makes more difference than anything. You start to emphasize the word you want to emphasize. And there was somebody who died not long ago called the Host Whisperer, this Australian who used to hear, people remember him. And one thing he said, which people are afraid to do, but it's really doable and it also works really well. Most people have trouble with the last parts of their sentences. Mm-hmm. It always goes da 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 da. Whatever the rhythm may be, that is when it's really asserted. That's where you can make the change. What he always suggested is to look up at the end of the last, say, four or five, the last line, or at least the last half of the line. Just look up. It's amazing how it has a more natural fall or it lands more naturally if you just look up at the end of the line. The big problem is, are you going to lose your place? You know, use your finger, whatever, you know. But I have found that that works. But if there was one bit of advice, it would be use your hands. And in terms of writing for your voice, you know, all you have to do is read. I used to, when I was editor of All Things Considered, I had to write for Robert Siegel, who could read endless amounts of long sentences, Noah Adams, who did not like any word that was longer than three or four syllables, and, you know, Linda, who was different from day to day. I'd never know how it would go. So it was, all of those intros were really different. You know, write stuff, read it. It'll become clear really fast.
I had a journalism professor that, which I thought was almost, it's like what we do at Radiolab at some level, was she just said, just record yourself talking to someone, like with a friend or with, you know, just to yourself. I mean, it doesn't really, one side of your phone conversation, and then type it out, like listen to it and type it out, and you'll hear sort of your natural intonations and your cadences and things like that. But Mary, what about a script?
Well, I would echo that, but I'd also say if you're reading a script, having someone else in the studio who you're reading to, yeah, can make it feel more conversational. You sort of get the stakes a little bit more. You'll interrupt yourself and they'll interrupt you when something's getting confusing or you want to explain it in a different way, and it can be helpful.
Right. And then do you guys have any thoughts for the conversational style, maybe? Not scripted?
Close your eyes. That's like, I've hit my nose on the mic a lot because of this technique that I'm developing. But
Miller always has
But no, but that's, like, and like, I think of it as almost gist tracking. Like, I know what I need to get from here to there, and I'll try it a few times. And I don't know, for me, closing my eyes helps because then I'm not reading. And then the other thing is I'm walking, like just taking drafts around the block on my smartphone. And just suddenly with clarity, when I listen to a draft in motion, I hear where I'm going on too long, narration I don't need, and just like walk and bring a piece of paper and like sit on the stairs outside, because I feel like you do your most pure writing when you're away from a computer.
I have a quick question for you, actually, which you said you've done it both ways, where you've done it, you know, Radiolab, just go into the studio and talk, and then you've done it where it's more scripted now.
Yes.
So I'm wondering what you prefer and what are the sort of advantages and challenges of both.
As Brooke said, writing is so much faster. And when and like I don't know how you guys do it every week and make it that so writing, it's faster, and when you need to turn things around and you can make so much, you can make quick edits, huge revisions without having broken your back and spending 2 weeks like crafting this thing, and to just you're less attached to it. I think writing is really good for speed and wild revisions, and then conversation is great because I think you can access certain truths and way of saying things when you're not, you don't have that judge on watching you write every word being like, you just, there's this whole realm of ideas and phrasings that exist outside of the computer in your hands. And so like conversation gives you a freshness and this kind of special world, but writing, but then it takes so long
Lou and I keep looking at each other because with Radiolab, you'll go in and you'll come out with like 4 hours of you like telling Jad something off the top of your head. Like, you know, and then you have to muddle through that and be like, okay, what parts of this conversation do I want?
Yeah.
What parts didn't work and I script? And Brooke doesn't have time for that every week.
So I don't know. I'm trying to figure out the fusion where maybe you just harness like 3 sentences from the conversation and throw everything else away and then write it. And like, I don't know.
And Heaven, do you have a fusion? Sorry, Mary, we'll circle back. Do you have a fusion or is it all conversation?
Oh, I mean,
is any of it scripted?
No, we definitely like prep for the segments, and even if it's like I want Tracy to be surprised, but I'll still tell her like a broad theme for what I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. But I think like, I don't know, the improv people are always like, yes, and that's kind of how I treat our conversations. Like you get better at like setting up her jokes or like, all right, Tracy, where's this going? But I'm going to go with it anyway. Like, you know, we just have, you get better in conversation at like sort of yes anding each other and be like, yes, I'll go with this.
Mary, did you want
to? Oh, no, I was just going to ask about the surprise thing because I feel like we go back and forth right now about how much are we going to surprise each other in the studio and how much are we going to know beforehand. And I wonder if you guys have thoughts on that.
We went on a staff retreat and we're trying to figure out how Bob and I can talk to each other more without sounding like those lame newscasters that say, oh, get out your snow tires. It's, you know, like, you know, we don't want it to sound fake. So, you know, we had a little exchange last week and this week I knew he was going to tell me a story. And so he said, did you know this? And I said, yes, I do. But I deliberately didn't listen to the tape so I can have an authentic response. So it's sort of transparent. We're trying to talk to each other, but we're not good at it yet kind of thing.
So a little bit of improv, a little bit of conversation, a little bit of scripting, and look up at the end of saying everything.
But also close your eyes.
And close your eyes. And maybe spin in some circles. I do some squats to like, because it makes you breathe deeply. I always do like 5 squats before I... And Justin Bieber does push-ups, like, if anyone wants to know. I tried that once.
First-name basis with Justin Bieber.
Yeah, I almost called him Belieber, and then I was like, wait, that's not his last name.
And drinking. Don't forget drinking.
Oh, bourbon. That's it.
So I had never also heard of vocal fry until Kate Hines of Manspreading fame just explained it to me, like, 3 weeks ago or something like that. And I just want to say, at the risk of sounding strident, which is also kind of like an anti-woman thing, I think that the whole idea of vocal fry is anti-woman. And so when I started in broadcasting in the Reagan administration, and like everybody who knows me now is going to think this story is weird, but I had a boyfriend in college when we worked at the college radio station. And we both worked at the college radio station. He said, "You are never going to succeed in radio. Your voice is too high." And I believe this. I believe it for a long time. And I got my first job in broadcasting at WUNC in Chapel Hill, and I went on the air, and I was so convinced the minute I opened that mic, they were going to fire me because they were going to be like, "Oh, her voice is too high." So, I've been in broadcasting since the Reagan administration, and... you know, I just want a Peabody, so I guess somebody can hear my voice. I just, you know, want to say that I think this is another obstacle, this whole fry thing. And, you know, it's because people are not used to hearing women's voices.
It's not just a women thing, though, Andrea.
What?
I mean, it's not really just a women thing. People are using it that way in their attacks, you know, but it is a thing. And it's
yes, it is a thing, but whether
and it
it's
isn't just limited to women.
If it's distasteful thing, if people are saying like, "Oh, these young women sound young," or like stupid high school girls or whatever, then I feel like it's it exists. I agree that it exists, but I think the idea of attaching a negative attribute to it is a way of making people feel unsure about their voices and what they're saying.
So to maybe build off of that, because I do think that it does exist in that both sexes have it, if it does exist. It's being targeted towards women. Do you think... panelists, that this is just one thing, and when we're done with vocal fry, we'll move like the angry minority audience that doesn't want to hear a female on the radio will go towards just another thing? And if so, is there anything we can do about that? I mean, it sounds like I shouldn't care, and that we just charge onwards. Lulu, you're nodding a lot.
The give less fucks. I think that's what I mean, and I think people will. I don't know. I think there's a little element of like, radio's this magical space where we get to exist without bodies and faces to critique, and like, let's invent a physical attribute to say if you're good or bad or measuring up. And I don't like. I think that it's so. I think we're going to leave it behind us. I think people are going to, I don't know. I think people will get used to it, and there'll be some people hanging on to the fry, and then it'll be like, we're going to leave it behind.
I don't think we're going to be slowed down by vocal fry. But Brooke?
No. Haters going to hate.
Haters going to hate.
Yes, it's true. We have one more comment here. Question down in the middle.
Thanks. Hi. So I'm 25, I guess, and I haven't really been on the radio. I just turned 25, that's why. But I guess I just want to like question just one more time like these sort of gendered notions of authority and how it's expressed. And I guess I was told recently that my favorite comedian, Chelsea Peretti, has a lot of vocal fry, and it made me think about how she uses her voice. And to me, when I hear her talking in this way that I guess is super fried, and I can hear it too, like it expresses a kind of dissent and like rebellion, you know, like someone's maybe talking at her. So her podcast called Chelsea Peretti, like she just opens the phone lines or like the Skype Google lines or whatever, and anyone can talk to her. So sometimes when I hear her, she's like, I don't know, I just hear her being like, you know, you're talking at my face, but like, I'm not necessarily listening. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, so to me that speaks a kind of authority and dissent and rebellion, and I guess, and also, like, I feel like I can understand her because I'm a millennial, which means that, like, if women are speaking, if millennial women are speaking in a certain way, like, they are cultivating a kind of authority for other women who are their audience and who we're, like, communicating with in a community. So then I'm curious if maybe this translates into being women who I see as being successful and making things and being in a workplace. Like, do you guys feel like you express authority in ways that are distinctly disruptive to masculinity, or sort of perform authority in ways that are different? You know what I mean? Like, if Vocal Fry is sort of veering away from a masculine tone that we've been told is like, that's what authority sounds like, there are other ways that you do it too.
Lulu?
Oh, that's an interesting way to put it, that it's like a bird call that other people aren't gonna get, but we are. I like that, but I'm also with Brooke that, like, it does, maybe there, okay, if there's some truth to it, maybe it conveys some distance, but maybe it's just a way that, like, we get what it means, and I don't know, I mean, I think there could be a little bit of that sort of, just like, you know, as SNL is constantly evolving what humor is, and when digital shorts started and there was this slightly different language and cadence and it connected with younger audiences, you know, there could be some of that going on. I guess there is stuff to talk about with Vocal Fry.
I like it. Yeah. Yeah, Lulu texted me last night and she goes, I'm over Vocal Fry. And I was like, okay. Heaven, do you have any thoughts?
I'm so over Vocal Fry. I just don't fucking care.
But I actually like this spin. I like this spin. We're about to end, and I like the spin we've got at the end of, like, dissent against authority and just trying out different ways to find a voice, and fuck it if people don't like it.
That's a cool reading. I think that's a valid reading. I just still don't care.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at. Like, I just don't care about Vocal Fry at all. Like, it comes from men who, like, literally never heard women speak. I just don't care.
Yeah.
To, like, validate that opinion. The fact that we even have a word for it, like, kill me.
We're thinking about takeaway. Our takeaway messages are keep trying out your voice. Stand up, don't give a fuck. Let's just go quickly down the line. What you want everyone to remember about finding your voice. Brooke?
I guess it's, you know, if you're afraid, don't show it.
Be confident.
It's not the same thing, but okay.
Yeah, make stuff for you and your friends, and who cares what other people say. It's as cheesy as it sounds.
Sorry, Lulu, you gotta come up with something new.
No, I can't. Oh, I have to, because I was just gonna hear the don't give a fuck. Like, yeah, I'm feeling really good about that.
And just keep doing it. Yeah, I mean, the practice. More that you do it, the better you're gonna get to you, not to other people. Don't do it for other people, but do it because you want to sound authentic to who you are.
Excellent. Let's give a round of applause.